that's something I kind of fell into by accident. But I originally started in a global rotational technology program fresh out of college.
That is Danielle Laregi, a senior developer advocate for marketing cloud here at Salesforce. I'm Josh Burke, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here on the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we're going to sit down and talk with Danielle about data cloud and how developers can interact with it. But we are going to continue right where we left off with earlier.
Yeah, even though I didn't go to school for computer science or anything like that. And then I've kind of just stuck with technology ever since then.
Interesting. What kind of lured you into the realm of tech then? Like, what was very interesting about it to you?
I think the thing that was most interesting to me about tech was that it seemed like this mystery that I didn't know what was going on in. Just seemed like this thing that I had no idea about. But I was very interested and curious as to how it worked. It was like, okay, I've had exposure to all these other things in life. And like, I know what finance, math, accounting, all that is. But tech, like, how does the cloud work? Or
Nice.
How does all these cool technology things work?
How do you break open the black box and get inside?
Basically.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. When did you first get into Salesforce?
So I first got into Salesforce. I was an accidental admin, like a lot of admins out there. And I was actually working for a large food distributor. And they had a Salesforce project that they need someone to kind of, you know, help out with and be a little bit of a miniature admin, do some data loading with Data Loader. And I got involved. And then I just got more and more interested about what Salesforce was. And then just took off from there.
How would you describe your current job at Salesforce?
The most fun job ever.
Nice.
I love it. I love this job.
So for people who are not familiar with a developer advocate, like, how would you say, see, this is a hard one because, like, I know from experience, like, when if I ask you, what's your day to day like, you know, as a developer advocate, you're like, I don't know, it's different every day.
Yep.
But tell me your mission statement in general.
Yeah. So developer advocates are mostly here to inspire developers and to help them to be successful. And I think developer advocacy is really about helping developers to learn new tools, demystifying things that might be a little bit scary for them to get into. And we're really kind of more of like the casual teachers, I would say, of developers, but also we're just people that, you know, love to build things and work with code.
I like that phrase, casual teacher. Like, we're not the professor who's going to throw like an eraser at you. We're like the college, the teacher's assistant that you get to hang out with after class.
Yeah. I like that.
All right. Well, let's start with your work around Marketing Cloud in general. For people not familiar with Marketing Cloud, like as a platform, like what's that platform like? What kind of applications are you building there? What kind of development tasks are getting done?
Yeah. So similarly to becoming like a Salesforce accidental admin, I think I kind of became a Marketing Cloud accidental admin as well. And I was working for another company and they were kind of like, hey, we just might learn Marketing Cloud and help out our marketing department. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And so as far as my projects I'm mostly working on with Marketing Cloud, I'm doing a lot of stuff with AmpScript, SSJS, which is server-side JavaScript, a lot of things with different Marketing Cloud programming languages. I'm trying to work on some stuff with the REST and SOAP API, but mostly I work on stuff that extends Marketing Cloud beyond the out-of-the-box capabilities.
Got it. I want to follow up on that, but I'm just going to say I'm noticing a trend here where you just kind of keep taking the next challenge, and that seems to be your career trajectory.
Yes. Yes. I mean, for this job, I was completely scared. I was completely frightened. Yeah. I told Renee when I first took this job, I was like, yeah, like, kind of let me ramp up to talking to big audiences. Like, let's not do like the first talk is like 100 people. Maybe I can ramp up a little bit.
Yeah, that's wise. I still remember my first time at whatever we were calling them at the time. They were Dream Tours or something like this. It was back like in 2012. And I'm sitting on stage with Dave Carroll, and we've practiced and we've prepped and we've done these demos and stuff. And then before he gets up on stage, he just turns to me and just, I don't know why he asked me this then, but he turns to me and he's like, "How many times have you done this?" And I'm like, "Done what?" And he's like, "Public speaking." I'm like, "Counting today." So, you know, not a bad way to go through it.
Yeah, that was kind of me also.
Yeah. Nice. What was your first public speaking?
My first public speaking was actually Southeast Dreamin' last year.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. I think another way I put it, it was when I did get this job or whatever, how many jobs would go was, I'm like, I would rather fail at this job than succeed at another one. That's how fun I find, like, you know, advocacy and working with the community and stuff like that.
I agree. I completely agree.
Let's dig back into what you were talking about with extending out the Marketing Cloud platform. What are some examples of that kind of integration?
Yeah. So with Marketing Cloud, there's a lot of stuff you can do out of the box, like with sending email messages, creating email messages, email message templates. But sometimes people want to trigger the email from another system that might be Salesforce or even a different CRM system that's not Salesforce or just a random system. In order to do that, they have to use APIs and integrations in order to do that. So we have a wide variety of REST APIs and SOAP APIs that allow them to trigger both email messages, mobile messages, and including Journey Builder journeys as well using our APIs.
And where does AmpScript fall into that? Because I'm only slightly familiar with AmpScript, so give me the elevator pitch for it.
So AmpScript is, if you want to customize your email message or you want to customize even a landing page, so AmpScript can be used across the entire Marketing Cloud platform. But if you want to customize it, like inserting information into a table or any type of data that you're bringing in from an external system, if you want to start inserting data, doing customization with the template, like hi, and then, you know, you've seen the email messages where it's had your first name and your last name in there, like hi, Josh Burke, stuff like that, like any type of personalization that requires AmpScript.
So it's sort of like it's somewhere in between a scripting language and a template.
Yes. Yes. It is considered a scripting language.
If somebody was going to learn it, it would like JavaScript be a good backbone for picking it up?
It's very different than JavaScript.
Okay.
So I would probably recommend that they probably just start flat out with AmpScript.
Got it.
JavaScript might confuse them a little bit. And the reason why JavaScript might confuse them is because in AmpScript, you don't actually have like any methods or classes. It's not an object-oriented programming language, and neither is JavaScript, but JavaScript can do a little bit more. It's a little bit more robust than AmpScript. So they might go to JavaScript and then come back to AmpScript and be like, man, I could have just started with AmpScript to begin with.
And just got to the end.
Yeah.
I love that little tug at JavaScript. It's not an object. It pretends like it's an object-oriented language, but yeah, it likes to. So then with the REST APIs and all that kind of stuff, do we have SDKs for specific languages or just sort of a bring your own language to talk to Marketing Cloud kind of?
Yeah. So we actually have 6 SDKs that Marketing Cloud developers can work with or any other developer. We have the C# SDK, Java SDK, Node SDK, PHP, Ruby, and even Python. So there's a wide variety of SDKs out there to work with Marketing Cloud.
If I get a nickel for every time I get Python on the show, I love it. All right, well, let's move a little bit into Data Cloud. Data Cloud has gone through a few name changes in the last year. It is still Data Cloud, right?
Do you still want your job, Josh?
So, yes. So at its core, though, when we say Data Cloud, we're still talking about CDP, a customer data platform, right?
Yes, 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 yes. So I've actually gotten into this discussion quite a few times with some of our lovely Marketing Cloud champions and MVPs. And yes, so at the core, Data Cloud is a customer data platform, which is something that's not necessarily completely new. So I think that when we first came out with CDP, you know, we named it exactly after what it is. It's a customer data platform.
It's what's on the tin. Yeah.
It's what it is. And now some people are like, well, it's still a customer data platform, which they're absolutely right. Data Cloud is still a customer data platform, but that's just no longer the name of it.
Got it. And it allows us to talk about the whole umbrella product, right? Like, we're not, it's not just CDP, but really quickly, what exactly is a customer data platform?
Yeah. So a customer data platform allows you to pull together your information about a specific customer across many different systems where that customer may be stored. So a lot of the times, different systems are holding different types of customer information, and all of that information is living in a silo. So sometimes we want to be able to see, you know, all that information integrated into one. And that's typically what a customer data platform does, is it allows you to pull together all that siloed information about a customer that's stored in all these different disparate systems and allows you to view it in a single view.
Got it. What are some, I can ask almost two questions at the same time. Like, what are some common examples of those silos, and what kind of connectors do we provide to talk to them?
Yeah. So I think the first silo is usually customer purchasing or any type of ordering data. So a lot of the times companies are retail based or they're product based companies and they're making sales to customers, and all of the data and history of all the sales or abandoned cart information or order information is usually living in one system for that customer. In our case, we offer Commerce Cloud as one of our solutions that typically deals with the sales and the ordering of a customer and servicing a customer and the retail shop and all of that. And we do have our Commerce Cloud connector out of the box that we offer with Data Cloud. I would say another huge silo is usually that email messaging and mobile messaging and marketing piece. So a lot of the times companies are sending email messages about, you know, different promos, deals, reward programs, coupons, sales. I'm sure you've gotten a ton of them in your inbox all the time. And usually any data related to that is living in their email tool.
Got it.
So
we have Marketing Cloud that allows us to kind of build this journey. Mm-hmm. And then Data Cloud, it sounds like, is trying to help us create this like unified view of a customer. Mm-hmm. And then those two are what's kind of working together to make a more intelligent marketing campaign. Is that accurate enough?
Yeah. Because I think the real power of it is being able to use the data that lives in one system is in another system. Mm-hmm. So if a customer, you know, already made a purchase or is already buying something, you know, you don't want to keep marketing to them for something that they're already purchasing or already buying.
Right.
The opportunity is to start marketing and emailing them about something that they're not buying.
Right. Right. Don't sell me the washing machine I just bought. Sell me the repair kit for the washing machine I just bought.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's nice. Now, in some conversations I've had with people about CDP, because I'm old, I've been around the block, and all of a sudden it seems like everybody's kind of talking about CDP. And I just kind of curious your thoughts on that. Then their take on it was, well, because we're getting rid of all the cookies. Like, we're losing this picture of people that we can track on websites. So we have to figure out like another way to create that identity.
Oh, that's an interesting take on it. You know, I think that tracking is still happening very effectively, but I do think that a lot of people, you know, like, I am definitely one of the people that's like necessary cookies only.
You're better than I am. I'm just like, accept all. Just accept all. Give me my news article about what's it. And yeah, just I'm a lazy programmer. They get me every single time.
But I think that there are probably like a few like lazy moments where I'm like, okay, accept all cookies, because this is painful to sit here and reject or manually select the cookies that I want.
Right.
But I think that like, really, we are in an age where companies, what's really, really important to companies is data. I think every company wants to know the data behind anything and everything.
Right. I mean, it's what powers our social media. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why things like Instagram are free. It's like we are the product, right? Like we are the data, and the data is gold in the back end.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think that's why Data Cloud has really taken off so much, is because data is hot.
Got it. Speaking of buzzwords, when somebody says data lake to you, what does that mean? Tell me, please.
I really do. Every time someone says data lake, I actually really like envision a blue lake.
I do too, right? But then like that's it. Like I just have this tranquil moment. I'm like, so there's a bunch of data under there, I guess.
And they're just hanging out in the lake, like
right,
floating.
Right. But is that how we describe this kind of unified structure between Data Cloud and all of its connectors?
Yes. So technically, Data Cloud is built on top of a data lake.
Got it.
And for some people, that's a little bit hard to grasp sometimes because of the fact that when you're in Data Cloud, because most of the configurations and most of the things that you're viewing in Data Cloud, it looks like you're actually in your Salesforce org. Mm. A lot of people have trouble sometimes understanding that, no, this is not Salesforce custom and standard objects you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with data lake objects and data model objects, and it's a lake, like. It's a lake.
What's the distinction between like a data lake object and a data object?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you first ingest your data via a data stream, and so like we got like a lot of water references here.
Me too. I love it.
You got streams and lakes. Okay, so when you first ingest your data via a data stream, and a data stream is basically something you set up just to ingest your data, the data first hits what's called a data lake object. And that data is completely unmapped. It's basically just your raw data going into an initial container within Data Cloud. So after that, what you have to do is you have to start mapping that data from that data lake to the actual data model that Data Cloud understands, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's once you do that mapping from that data lake to that data model, that what the end product is the data model object. And that's what you're actually working with, that is actually holding all of your field data and values, that's being harmonized and absorbed via all these data streams from all these external systems.
Got it. What's the similarity to a data object and like an external object? Are they kind of, I mean, because it's the data is not, when we say ingested, are we pulling the data in and then transforming it? Or are we basically just still kind of pointing back to the ingestion point, but just doing it I really like the word you use, like in this really nice harmonized way.
Yeah. So the data is not actually transformed when it first hits the data lake object or when it's mapped to the data model object. Mm-hmm. So once you get the data into the data model object, then you have the ability to start doing a little transformation on the data after it's in the data model object.
Got it.
But right now, it's more of just like a copy and paste, basically, from your original data source to Data Cloud.
Got it. Is, as a platform developer, how similar can I think of these data objects as custom objects, or are they less flexible than that?
So they very much look like a standard or custom object in Salesforce. So if you actually go into Data Cloud, what you'll see is there will be a lot of objects that are almost a one-for-one kind of match to your Salesforce standard objects. Mm-hmm. So like you'll see that there's an account object, there's a lead object. Contact is a little bit unique, where it's divided across multiple contact type of objects, but they are very similar to standard and custom Salesforce objects. And one of the ways that they are most like them is that you can extend them by adding custom fields on them. And you can also create an altogether brand new data model object or custom data model object that's not one of the standard out of the box ones to map your data to.
Got it. Does Apex and LWC kind of treat them as adjacent to custom objects? Like, am I mostly learning, if I'm the developer working with the data model you created, for instance, is it mostly just that I need to understand what that data model looks like?
So I might have to double look up this answer for that question. Okay. But it is my understanding that you cannot use Apex on the data lake.
Okay.
Or data model objects. It is my that is my understanding.
Okay.
And as far as Lightning Web Components, you can build custom Lightning Web Components. I know that for a fact on the data model objects.
Got it. Well, and kind of similar to that, what role does Tableau play into like working with this data?
Yeah. So Tableau has its own connector.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it connects natively via a special connector to Data Cloud. And you could start building Tableau dashboards and analytics and lenses and all that stuff with the data stored in Data Cloud. Sure. Now, one of the reasons that Tableau is so powerful with Data Cloud is because Data Cloud actually does not have the same object structure as Salesforce. You can't use Salesforce out-of-the-box reports and dashboards.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Got it. Nice. Tell me a little bit about scale. Like, when we say data lake, and I'm not going to ask you for specific numbers that are probably like on a slide somewhere, but give me like kind of a concept of just like how big does a data lake really get?
Yeah. So Data Cloud can hold trillions of records.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It is made to scale from the beginning. So it is designed to be able to hold trillions of records. Obviously, nice. You still want to use like some of the best practices to ensure like there's not data skew and stuff like that, but it's mm-hmm. made to scale.
Got it. Well, speaking of trillions of records and data lakes, another topic you might have heard recently is AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things I have conversations with people, it's like these AI models, they're really only as good as the data behind them, right?
Yeah.
What role, and I know, trust me, my audience like can hear, and every now and then you can hear air quotes, right? Like we hear the asterisk. That is the forward-looking statement that everybody just sort of assumes. But where do you see this going? Like what role do you think Data Cloud will play moving forward with AI?
Well, AI can't work without data. Right. So right. I think that I definitely see Data Cloud and data in general definitely being a huge power of a source for AI, like definitely being like the engine behind AI. I'm really, really interested to see how this takes off, because I will admit that like when the whole Web3 craze kind of hit, yes. I was like, I was not really on board that train. Mm-hmm. But this train, I'm like, no, guys, this is legit. Everyone's like, but do you think this is like real? Because like, you know, Web3 and NFT and crypto, that was like, I'm like, no. But this is like legit.
Yeah. Yeah. I am 100% with you there. I really feel it reminds me of like the early days of IoT. And it's like we started getting more and more use cases and the technology kind of started getting, you know, more and more abundant. Mm-hmm. And eventually it just sort of faded. Like it's not that IoT went away. It's just sort of it's faded in the background because we're all using it every day anyway.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're moving in that direction. And I completely agree. I don't think this is going to be another, you know, there's whole companies now. I guess there's whole companies started up around crypto too, but they haven't been doing well.
Exactly. I think AI companies will do really well, and they have been doing really well. I mean, look at the ability. I always think like the ability to get a product into the hands of just everyday people, like how certain AI products have been the craze amongst normal everyday people, not just like developers or techies. I think that is also like shows the true power of how prominent a technology.
And that's our show. Now, before we go, I did ask after Danielle's favorite non-technical hobby, and well, it's a fairly common one for the show.
What is my favorite non-technical? Sorry, what was that?
Hobby.
Oh, you mean I have hobbies that are non-technical?
This is why I have to have the caveat, yeah.
Well, I am a avid video gamer. Actually, I'm talking to you through my gaming headsets, actually.
That's awesome.
These are my high quality gaming headsets. I'm not very good at games, though. I will say I'm not good.
What games do you play? What's your latest?
So my latest that I recently downloaded was Diablo 4.
There you go.
And I, yep. I kind of gawked at the price. I was like, dang, these games are getting expensive.
They are. Yeah. 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 My wife and I did not leave the couch during the beta. So I'm a little, we're tiptoeing our way back into Diablo 4 before, you know, I might lose my job.
I played the beta too. It was like in between. It was like in between travel, play the beta, go give a talk, play the beta. Beta's up again. And now it's like, okay, it's the full blown game, but I'm so far behind. Like, everyone's beating the game. They're all leveling up. And I'm like, yeah, my character's still level 18. I'm still going through the storyline.
we are right there with you. It's like my brother just finished the campaign like last week. And a friend of mine like took a week off. And so he's like, they're both like level 92 or something. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll just sit over here with my level 15 rogue and run behind you all. On your horses.
My friends are all on like their second and third characters. They're like, I'm on a different class now. I'm like, that's okay. But yeah, that's my guilty pleasure. Like if I'm doing anything with Coot, I'm literally just like playing. I'm a big Team Fight Tactics fan.
Okay.
It's a spinoff of League of Legends. It's the Auto Battler. I love that game.
I want to thank Danielle for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody. And I'll talk to you next week.